I have in the studio with me Trina Maggie from the Bailey Howe Library, University of Vermont. How long does it take to become a librarian?
Good question. Well, most librarians get a master's degree, a master's in library science, and that'll take you maybe 2 years to earn that degree.
Okay, after the preliminary college stuff, I can't do it.
Right.
Okay. What inspired you to take that road?
Well, you know, for me, it was a career change, Charles. I was working in marketing and public relations and decided I really wanted to stay working with information and text and communication, but I wanted, instead of kind of shaping people's agenda, I wanted to answer their questions, to help them pursue their questions and their areas of interest. And so librarianship is a perfect way to do that.
What's the first book you remember reading?
I remember reading Hop on Pop and all of the other Dr. Seuss books with my dad. And I remember also the first big book I read was Heidi. My dad and I used to sit down on the couch and read that every evening after my younger sister went to bed.
So your dad read to you as a child.
Yeah.
And I had some other possible guests here, and I wanted to kind of take a poll if reading to you as a child steered you towards the books as a career, which I think it probably did. I probably didn't tell you, both of my parents were librarians, and I got read to a lot. Now, of course, I live in a house full of cluttered up books and stuff. When I went to visit you at the library there, I noticed a whole load of computers there. And something I would have liked to ask a bookseller, I wonder if internet sales like Amazon.com and stuff has hurt bookstores or not.
Yeah, you know, I think bookstores are doing really well. They seem to be doing a brisk business. And, you know, folks have always said, well, with everything on the web and everything on the internet, people aren't going to be reading books anymore. And it just hasn't proven to be true. You know, you go into Borders downtown in Burlington, and it's busy, always busy, people everywhere. I think people really like something tangible. They like the feeling they have when they sit down with a good book.
So the computers in your library aren't pushing the books out to the garbage can?
No, they're not. We still get boxes and boxes of books every week into our library. In fact, we're running out of room, and we have to constantly weed out books and ship them off to our facility on the edge of campus. So there are plenty of books that are still pouring in.
So my mother was in the periodicals department, and once they put stuff on microfiche or whatever, it got weeded to me, which was nice. But that was back in the day. I don't know if things work that way still or not. That might, this kind of crosses agendas here, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, might kind of be a hole in the argument of the record industry that says all burning CDs and stuff and sharing files hurts their business, because you don't think it's hurt the book business that computers have that kind of availability.
Yeah, that's true. It's an interesting point. You know, a lot of people think that being able to share files on computers helps kind of the small artist get their music out there. So I know there's a variety of opinions on that.
So I lost the CD that I made of Michael Moore talking about how librarians, but I'm going to recap this story kind of quickly. He had a book, and it was published the day after 9/11, and it was called Dirty White Men or something like that. It was about
Stupid White Men.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And it was about Bush and them, and they wanted him to change a bunch of chapters. He wouldn't do it. They were going to put the book in the garbage can. And he went and did he was talking somewhere about it, mentioned it. There was a librarian in the audience. That librarian talked to other librarians about it. They talked to the publishers, became a big thing. They published his book, and of course it went to number one on all these things. But one of the things he said was that we think of librarians as kind of these introverted, quiet, in the library kind of people. And I thought I said to you, you struck me as meek or something, and I thought you got mad at me about that or something.
Should I get mad at you? I just thought it was probably not the right perception, Charles.
Okay.
And in fact, you know, it's been interesting. My background is in business and communication, and so I've kind of hung out with a different sort of professional crowd for a while. And one thing I've really noticed about librarians is that they are not meek. They're anything but that. They, you know, can talk a blue streak. If you call them together for a meeting and you're trying to convene the meeting, you can't get them to shut up and get started. So they've got a lot to say often.
So what should be in the library?
What should be in the library? A diversity of information and a diversity of formats. You know, at my library at Bailey Howe, we're a large library, so we're fortunate to have a pretty sizable budget, and we can collect lots of different kinds of information. You know, you've got your standard reference books. We've got literature of all kinds, including children's literature, books on science. We've got all kinds of databases. We've got government information and maps and videos and feature films and, you know, all kinds of CDs, everything from recordings of Buddhist chants all the way to, you know, homegrown band Fish. So a huge variety of material.
I was going to ask you about art, but I guess you mentioned that in the music thing. But so art books and that kind of thing, certainly, too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And we also have medical information. We've got a medical library on our campus.
So if I wanted to be able to perform, or say my wife or a woman wanted to be able to perform a home abortion, could she go to a library and find this information?
Depends on the library, of course.
Some,
you know,
library.
But some library, probably so.
Okay. I'm wondering if, as this is a hypothetical question, as things move, let's say, to the right, or as the Supreme Court and all that, and abortion becomes against the law down the road, does that make that information illegal?
Well, in America, you know, we have the First Amendment, which talks about the freedom of speech, and we have the Bill of Rights that says, as a free people, we should have access to information. And so that's one thing librarians work very hard to preserve, is the idea that information should be available to people, and that it's not, you know, it's
all
not
information?
Libraries have collection development policies, and they try to meet as best they can the needs of their community. And so within their budget and within their professional judgment about what are good quality materials, they try their best to collect a variety of viewpoints and information about a wide range of topics.
Okay. So if you have records on your computer about the patrons of your library, how easy is it to purge that information?
In our library, we have made adjustments to our online computer system so that we are not collecting for a long period of time information about the books you check out and that sort of thing. You know, we made some decisions about whether we should keep that information. And as you know, computer storage is very cheap these days. It doesn't take much money to have a lot of information hanging around for a long period of time. So libraries are becoming a little more conscious now, I think, of the decision about whether you want to have that information available for law enforcement or for someone else to come in and get it. So we have usually the ability to change the settings on our system and to make changes to the computer so that the information is purged once a person brings a book back, for example, so that we're not keeping a record indefinitely of what they have looked at in the library.
And do you think libraries in general are going that way?
I think many more are now that we have had the USA Patriot Act introduced a couple years ago. It really has come to the forefront, and it's something that librarians and booksellers also are thinking a lot about nowadays. And I imagine many small public libraries may not even have online computer systems, so they may be using a more manual paper system to keep track or not of their patron records.
And you're not going to tell me if anybody ever asked you about your records, right?
Well, it's if anybody were to come into our library and ask for records under the USA Patriot Act, for example, that actually includes a gag order, so we are not allowed to tell anybody whether that's happened.
Not the person and not anybody else.
No, not the person whose records were sought or anyone else.
Has anybody been prosecuted under that yet?
any librarians for sharing that information. Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge.
So you wrote Mr. Sanders a letter recently. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, it's not so recent anymore. I guess it's about a year and a half ago or so.
And is that when you stepped down from being the president of the Library Association?
Yeah, I was just finishing. I had just finished my term as president of the Vermont Library Association, and I was serving on the board as past president.
And what was his reaction?
Well, let me back up a little and say that, you know, the letter was not just from me. It was the letter that I had brought to the board of the Vermont Library Association and asked them to support it and to sign on. And they decided unanimously that they wanted to do that. And the letter outlined our concerns about the USA Patriot Act. And we sent it to our congressional delegation. So Bernie Sanders, as well as Senators Jeffords and Leahy. And Bernie's reaction was terrific. He was very responsive and told us he wanted to take action right away.
And has he?
He has, yeah. He actually introduced a piece of legislation in March of last year called the Freedom to Read Protection Act. And it was the very first bill introduced in Congress that seeks to amend the USA Patriot Act.
And how does probable cause fit into all this?
Yeah, that's the really important issue. What the USA Patriot Act does is it really lowers the standard for when law enforcement can get access to your business records. It used to be that law enforcement could get a court order, and if they demonstrated to a judge or to a court that they had reason to believe a crime had been committed, they had some specific evidence, some specific facts about a person, they could go and get this court order, and they could bring that to the library, and that that would allow them to demand that we turn over circulation records or whatever. The Patriot Act, there's a specific section of it, Section 215, that really changes this situation. And under that section, law enforcement can get an order demanding any tangible things, is what they say. So that could include books or our computers or our server. And the difference is, Charles, in order for them to get that order, what they must do is go to a secret court, the FISA court, which stands for Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And they go to this court, and instead of having to demonstrate probable cause, they now just say that the information they seek is related to an investigation about terrorism. So it's a much more broad and vague standard. It's not clear to us that they have to name any names or cite any specific evidence anymore in order to get the information. So that's how probable cause fits into the picture here. Probable cause doesn't seem to any longer be the standard.
Right, and that's kind of a threshold that, as a society, over 200 years, we've kind of agreed upon for a lot of things. A radical like me may say, you have no business looking in my car, house, or anything under any circumstances. And then, of course, some people might think that the protector government has the right to look at everything all the time, which they may do. But somewhere in the middle has been this probable cause threshold that we've kind of agreed upon so that people can be feel protected by law, but also have some sort of privacy constraints.
That's exactly right. And it's a matter of checks and balances. I mean, our whole governmental system is supposed to be based on the fact that no branch of government has too much power. So that's why you want strong judicial oversight. I mean, you want law enforcement to be able to do their jobs, but you want somebody checking up on them and making sure that they're looking into people only when they really need to be. You don't want government going on fishing expeditions. And so so our concern is that under this new rule, they could gather lots of information, vast amounts of information about all of our activities in our libraries, for example. Where does that data go, you know, and how long does it stay, and what will government do with it? So we really think, you know, the request for information needs to be much more specific, much more particularized, as they say. And there's a whole other section of the law, too, that concerns librarians.
And so librarians in general are not asking to say, no, we're never going to give you our records or anything like that. They're just looking for a measure of respectability to it or something like that.
That's exactly right. I mean, historically, librarians have cooperated with law enforcement. You know, when we've been shown search warrants or court orders, and they look to be in good shape, as judged by our legal counsel, then of course we have cooperated. We're not interested in standing in the way. You know, librarians know that we all want to be safe, and there are times when law enforcement needs to get information. The difference is that before the USA Patriot Act, those activities conformed, we think, more closely to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and they required much more careful judicial oversight, and we're worried about the loosening of that.
Now, there's been other things before this Patriot Act that have been like mandates on and unfunded at that on libraries as well, correct?
Yeah, that happens often. And
I'm thinking about one you told me about, but I don't see it in my – the Children's Protection something.
Yeah, the children – before we switch over to that, I do want to make another point, and that's about another section of the USA Patriot Act in addition to Section 215. There's another section, 216, that has to do with expanding the telephone monitoring laws for doing wiretapping, that kind of thing. And this section expands it to include internet routing and web addressing information. And what this section means for libraries is that because we provide public computer access, it's possible for law enforcement to come in and order us to install monitoring devices on our computers. To track, you know, the web addresses that people are visiting and the email addresses that are being sent by people using our computers. And interestingly enough, even though the USA Patriot Act is supposed to be all about terrorism, this part of the law is relevant to criminal investigations as well. And again, there's no indication that they need to meet the standard of probable cause. So again, it's another area in which they can sweep up a lot of information about what you're doing in the library.
Is there a gag order attached to that?
There is
as well.
Yes. Yeah. So both of these sections prohibit your librarian or your bookseller from telling you that this is going on.
Hey, that's a hot computer, don't.
Yeah, right. That's right. You don't know. When you sit down at that machine, you don't know what's there, and we can't tell you by law.
Okay.
So,
going backwards, maybe, because in this case, this Child Protection Act, there's been a court battle.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it hasn't been good from your perspective.
It's been mixed. Yeah, the most recent action has not been good. The Children's Internet Protection Act was passed a few years ago. It was one of the last bills that President Clinton signed into law, actually, in December before he left office. And what this law says is that any public or school library that accepts certain kinds of federal funding for their internet services must install what we call an internet filter on their library computers. And that filter is supposed to be filtering out and stopping people from accessing pornography on the web. And the simple problem is, Charles, that they don't work. The filters just don't work. So they let some pornography through, and they also block an awful lot of information that is clearly not pornographic. And so it's blocking people's access to a lot of very useful educational information that is protected by our First Amendment. So that's the Children's Internet Protection Act, and the American Library Association has fought to have that ruled unconstitutional, and a district court unanimously said, yes, that's unconstitutional. They don't work. They block protected free speech. We shouldn't be using them. But just last summer, the case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court overturned the lower court ruling and said that the law should stand. So now we're back faced with the situation that libraries must install these devices if they want to continue getting those federal funds.
All libraries.
It doesn't affect academic libraries. It's public libraries and school libraries. If they want to get these federal monies.
What's an academic library? Sorry.
An academic library is just a library that's associated with a college or university.
Oh, okay.
So University of Vermont, for example, this is an issue that doesn't affect us.
But it would affect the Cabot Library or something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah,
they
your public library. Right. If your public library, in order to provide you with internet service, needs to get some federal funding to support that, and many of them do because their budgets are so small, then they are required to buy and install these internet filters.
which costs a lot.
Cost a lot. I've seen estimates, you know, they can range from $10,000 to $20,000 a year to maintain these. So that's, some libraries are thinking, you know, it's not really even worth it.
No, you could get a lot of books for $20,000.
Yeah, or just forego the federal money and, you know, just put that money into providing your own internet service.
And this was all to protect children from pornography.
Yes, that's what was supposed to happen. And, you know, that may be a laudable goal, depending on what you think, but the problem is they just don't work. And there have been lots and lots of studies about these filters and tests of them. And it's very interesting to see the information that they block. And, you know, lots of interesting examples. The web pages of the Quakers, a web page about how a bill becomes a law, the National Rifle Association. And there are some funny examples. You know, Dick Armey, who's in our Congress, his web page was blocked because it has the word dick in it. And so it didn't get through. And that turned him into an opponent now of this law. And he used to be an advocate, but now he sees that they don't work. The web page for the Democratic Party has been blocked by some of them, as well as the Traditional Values Coalition. So it's kind of nonsensical, some of these things. The problem is the filters generally try to work by just looking for keywords that might be suspicious. Okay, so you can see how that's problematic. I mean, if you have a wonderful site from the National Institutes of Health on breast self-exam, for example, to prevent, you know, and detect breast cancer, that page could be blocked by a filter because it has the word breast in it. One of my favorite examples now, I've learned there's a library in the Midwest, I think, who tried to access its own website. They had developed a website for the library, and they couldn't get to it because it was the Flesh Public Library, named after a major donor, Mr. Flesh.
Uh-huh.
So this was blocked. So it's, they just don't work.
So Mr. Armey just hasn't learned the pornographer's secret of take the vowel out of your thing and it shoots right through the filter anyway.
And that's the flip side, okay? Well, I'm talking about all these sites that are perfectly legitimate that are being blocked. Another example, the town of Essex has sex in the word, so it gets blocked. So people can't get to their town website. At the same time that's happening, pornographers know these tricks and they find ways to get around it. And so we find that, you know, people think their children are protected, and they're not, because some pornography still gets through.
Which, from my perspective, it's not the government's job to protect your children. It's the parents' job to protect their children, or not, as the case, or train them to deal with the real world that we're getting thrust upon. I personally believe the pornography should be on the shelves in the library. Well, and that's why I asked you about art. I kind of think there's a fine line there. And if you allow people to start drawing that line, and if you look at old art, it's all naked people. So, you know, what happens when you start drawing that line? Alrighty, I think I have a caller on the air there, do I?
Yep.
You're choking to death, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't understand your question, so I'm just going to let you throw it right out there.
Okay. Earlier in the show, you were talking about, the internet, and if internet sales have brought down the reading of books. And I was just wondering if websites like Pink Monkey and SparkNotes that give a immediate outline of a chapter or a whole book have brought down the participation in your library of students?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, the fact that those things are on the internet is just a matter of kind of a new format, because we've always had, you know, some plot summaries and cliff notes and those kinds of things in print form. And in fact, in our reference collection at Bailey Howe, we have a series called Master Plots, and you can look at Master Plots and it'll give you a two-page summary of great works of literature. So the fact that those things are on the internet is just kind of a different format, but it's not really a new phenomenon. And so I don't know that it would have had that much more effect than the former print sources on people's readership of the actual books. I think, you know, they all serve a purpose. Sometimes when I've read a book many years ago, and then I want to remind myself of pieces of the plot or who the major characters were, it's handy to refer to those sources. But, you know, if you really want to sit down and read a good story, there's nothing, of course, like reading the full book. And so I don't think those short summaries are ever going to replace that. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Good.
And perhaps if you read the summary or saw that outline and liked it, you would be inclined to buy the book. And this is why I think that the recording industry is full of it when they say that file sharing hurts their business, because if you get something that you like, you tend to go out and buy the album down the road. Or that's been my experience and with the people I know.
I think your caller agrees with that as well.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't want to admit to any wrongdoing or knowing anybody that does that, but there you go.
Yep.
So thanks for the call.
No problem.
Stay tuned.
Thanks.
I will. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So, in the courts, things haven't necessarily gone good.
Yeah, well, they went very well with that district court where we got a unanimous decision, but then the Supreme Court overturned it. Now, what the Supreme Court did do, they said if there's any adult who comes into the library and wants the filter turned off, they should have the right to go up to the librarian and ask for that change to be made. But that's not as easy as it sounds,
no,
because some of these systems are a little tricky to use, and librarians in, again, small public libraries may not have the technical support to be able to do that easily. So that's another issue that now we're working on. How can we make that possible? And it also requires the patron to be able to come up and say, I want the internet filter turned off, which for some people, that may be something they don't want to say or may feel shy about saying. And so, that barrier is still there, and we don't feel very good about that. So, the library community is still kind of struggling with what to do with this Supreme Court decision.
And what happens if the parent comes in and says, I want the filter turned off for my kid?
I think the law would allow them to do that, too, if they're doing it on behalf of their child and they're there with them. I'm not absolutely certain, but I think that's the case.
So, with this not-so-good outcome in the courts, when it comes to Section 215, there's another track seems to be emerging here, as opposed to the courts when you have this problem with a law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you may be referring, we're advocating really for legislative change to the USA Patriot Act. Because you can try to get these issues resolved by the courts, but it takes years and years. You have to have cases, you have to have people who are affected before you can file a case, and it just takes a very long time. And so we've been taking the tack of going directly to Congress and saying, look, you made a mistake when you passed the USA Patriot Act. It was passed in haste, and we can talk more about that in a minute. It was passed during a time when there was a lot of fear and anxiety, and politicians felt like they had to take some kind of action. So this was the action they took, and many now regret it. And so we're trying to talk to them, to communicate with them, and get them to amend the pieces of the law that are most egregious. And there are many other pieces of the law. We're focusing, of course, on the sections that affect libraries and library users, but there's lots of other sections to be concerned about in that law.
Okay, and how's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well, actually. Bernie Sanders introduced his bill last March, and he has now over 140 co-sponsors of the Freedom to Read Protection Act. And what that bill would do if it got passed, it would exempt libraries and booksellers from Section 215 of the Patriot Act. And I should also state right up front that Bernie did not vote for the USA Patriot Act. He was one of a relatively small group of people in Congress who didn't vote for it. But now he's really stepping up to the plate and has this legislation out there. So he's got all these sponsors from both political parties, which is very interesting. People on all levels of the political spectrum are starting to get concerned. Conservatives and liberals alike are a little worried about this overreaching government. But he can't get the House leadership to give the bill a hearing. So it's kind of stalled, and we just need to continue to work to get more and more co-sponsors so that there's more political pressure. And since that time, there have been additionally, I think, five other bills now introduced in the Senate. So lots of people are giving this some attention finally. And at this point, we're supporting all of those bills. You know, we want to see any movement possible going forward. Some bills are better than others. Some are broader than others. But we're getting behind them all just to get some action on this.
And what was the thought you wanted to go back to?
How the Patriot Act was passed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because it's kind of an interesting story. You know,
it's quick, right?
Very, very quick. And there were actually, you know, the whole thing was done in response, of course, to September 11, right? And so there were legislative proposals that were being introduced within a week of September 11 happening. And the USA Patriot Act is kind of an amalgamation of several of those proposals. And it was introduced into Congress on October 23rd, so just about 6 weeks after September 11. And it was debated in the House for a whole hour and 38 minutes, very, very little debate, passed the next day, okay, one day after it was introduced. Then it went to the Senate, and it passed that day, the next day. And the following day, it was signed into law by President Bush. This is, it's amazing to me because it's a huge law. It's, if you print it off from the internet, I think it's several hundred pages. The printed copy that we got from the government is, I think, 130 pages. It amends 15 existing statutes. It's a big piece of legislation. There were no hearings, Charles, not one. Okay. No experts came in to testify before Congress to talk about this law, pro or con. There were no committee reports. There are no committees that weighed in on it or said what they thought about it. No amendments were made to it. It was just really rushed through. And that's really unusual. I work in government documents. Half of my shifts are downstairs in government documents, and I help students find legislative histories. They track down how various laws have been passed, and this is very unusual. I mean, you almost always can find some hearings and some reports on the shelves, which is important because it gives people a chance to weigh in on the legislation and to consider its merits, pro and con. And it just didn't happen in this case.
200 pages in 6 weeks. What pops into my mind is that it was written beforehand. They already had it in the drawer, ready to go, you know, and was just waiting for an excuse or something.
None of us know for sure, but a lot of people have said that very thing. Huh. How could they possibly have written this so quickly? And if you take a look at the law, you would probably think it's even more suspicious because it's a very difficult law to read. What it does is it essentially edits other laws. So it will say, you know, look at U.S. Code title such and such, paragraph X, and insert this phrase after the first comma. You know, so it's pretty complicated. And many people think that perhaps these were lots of proposals that law enforcement had wanted for perhaps several years, and this was an opportunity to package them together. I don't know. But yeah. that's what many
it's
people
all hypothetical.
Suspect.
The thing that does trouble me about the law enforcement side of it is that the history, or at least especially recent history, last 20 years, law enforcement doesn't get used for what it says it's going to be used for. And a lot of it is busting teenagers with joints and whatnot, and really a bunch of nonsense that's very expensive. And so it makes me nervous because I know terrorism's not in my... thing, but I don't want people really checking up on what I read necessarily, or what my kids read. It's going back to the thing that I've been sort of mixing in with that courting industry stuff is if your children are burning stuff, they bust the parent whose computer doesn't even know what's going on with that computer usually, and that's the other thing that kind of I find very silly about that Pornography Protection Act is that. Most of the young people I know are so much more computer literate than me. It would work for me. The filter would keep me out of most of the stuff, but it wouldn't work on my children because they're going to get around it, just like the pornographers or whoever else. So I don't know. They've shown me. Oh, well, enough of what I was lurking in there.
You know, back to the passage of this law, in addition to the short time frame, if you look back at news reports of what was going on during that very week that all of this was being rushed through the House and the Senate, what you discover, of course, is the other big event of that time, which was the anthrax scare in Washington. And this was just the very time that the office buildings were being shut down because letters were coming through that were tainted with anthrax. You know, people could not get into their offices, literally, to check their email, to read their correspondence. If you look at the congressional record and you hear what people were saying during that very, very short period of debate, some of them are saying things like, hey, could we read this bill before you call for a vote on it?
And that's the guy that gets the anthrax, right? How do you scare some rich white guys?
So it's, you know, people were passing a really substantial piece of legislation that introduced major changes in the way law enforcement does its work, and they hadn't even had a chance to read the bill first.
So is there a plan for getting the congressional leadership to look at these amendments?
I'm sure there are. You know, this is the work of all of those many staffers, right, on Capitol Hill. And I know that folks in Bernie's office, for example, have thought about this long and hard. And they've attempted several times, I think, to get this bill amended to other things or to tack it on to appropriations bills and such. And it just has failed. But they're continuing to work. They're not giving up. And you know, it looks right now like all of our whole congressional delegation is really on board. And so there's not much more that Vermonters can do to get our people on board. And so what I tell people to do is call their family and friends who live in other states. Raise awareness with those folks and get more and more people in other states to sign on as co-sponsors. I hope that there will come a point when, if there are enough co-sponsors, that the House leadership can no longer ignore it. We'll have to give the bill a hearing and affect some change.
And there is this petition.
Yes, there's now, yeah, exactly. There's a petition going around. It's a national effort, and it's being coordinated by three groups, the American Library Association and the American Booksellers Association, as well as the Penn American Center, which is a writers group that looks out for free speech issues. And these three groups have come together, and they're trying to collect 1 million signatures by May. And American Library Association holds its legislative days in May, where a bunch of librarians descend on Capitol Hill, and we talk to our representatives. And our hope is to be able to take, you know, 1 million signatures to Capitol Hill the first week of May and say, look, the American people want something done. You know, we appreciate the fact that you thought you were trying to keep us safe by passing the USA Patriot Act, but you know, we don't feel safer knowing that we're now subject to intrusive government, you know, searches.
Okay, so May is the deadline.
May is the deadline. So,
and there is a web address on here, www.readerprivacy.org, which I would imagine has a lot of information.
It sure does. And you can print out the petitions, take it around to your community groups, your family, your workplace. Ask your local library to put it up. Maybe they'll do that.
And I know that this petition's available in some local bookstores. I know for a fact that it's in the Galaxy bookstore. Pretty sure it's in Bear Pond Books there in Montpelier, and probably in the rest of them around here would be my guess. And there will be these petitions down here at WGDR for the near future, and I'll make sure that they get sent in and
excellent. That's
taken
great.
Care of. And this is the petition capital of the world here in Central America. We have petitions in the stores about changing the traffic flow on Route 2 and all kinds of stuff. So I think we can gather some signatures towards that.
That would be great. That'd be great.
You know,
we put them up in the Bailey Howe Library just a couple of weeks ago, and we've already got 22 pages worth of signatures. People are signing on.
Good. And I guess these people are not scared of forwarding their name to the Uncle Sam.
I guess not. I think there's strength in numbers, you know?
Yeah. And maybe, who knows, maybe that 1 million signatures might push it to the floor.
That's our hope.
Okay.
Yep.
So what does Patriot Act stand for?
Yeah, it's actually an acronym. And so sometimes if it's done right, you'll see it spelled out in capital letters. And that's because it stands for something. And here's what it stands for. Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. So it's quite a mouthful, and someone must have worked terribly hard to get that all to come out as USA Patriot Act.
So some of this law sunsets.
Yeah, it's a misnomer that that the whole law just automatically is going to go away in a couple of years. You may hear people say that, well, we shouldn't be too worried because it'll all disappear. And that's not true. There are only a handful of sections that actually automatically expire. One of them is Section 215, the one that we talked about at the earlier part of the show, having to do with library and business records. That
216.
215.
Oh, okay.
215 will sunset December 31st, 2005. So that's with us for another couple years, and will automatically go away unless Congress renews it. But Section 216, the one we talked about where they can install monitoring devices on our computers in the library, that one does not sunset. So that's going to take a deliberate act of Congress to change that. Otherwise, it's with us forever. So that's important. And I think we owe Senator Leahy some credit for getting these sunset clauses in here where he was able to. But it's not the whole law, unfortunately.
Yeah, and he was the recipient of a package of white powder mail, too.
He was, yes, well, he was.
Okay. So it's been a collective effort of booksellers, librarians, and readers to elevate this to you being in Mother Jones magazine and the whole thing, bringing it to the forefront.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are a lot of people right here in Vermont who deserve a lot of credit. You know, a lot of good things start in this small state. And, you know, the letter that the Vermont Library Association sent on to our congressional delegation, the booksellers in New England drafted a very similar letter and sent it as well. And Linda Ramsdell, owner of the Galaxy Bookshop in Hardwick, Vermont, was leader of that effort and worked very hard and deserves a lot of credit for speaking out. Michael Katzenberg, who owns Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, took a really bold step of purging his customer database. He was keeping track of records of people who purchased frequently at his shop to offer them certain benefits and such, and decided when he became aware of the USA Patriot Act that he didn't want to have that data hanging around so that it wouldn't be available to law enforcement. So he actually led an effort to get his computer software vendor to really write some new code and to change the program so that he could keep track of the dollar values that people were spending, but not the titles of the books they were buying. And he got some national press coverage for that effort, too.
And that probably cost him some loot.
It might have, but, you know, I think he has found that most of his customers were really, really supportive and are rewarding him with their business because of the stand that he took.
And now this software is probably available for other bookstores as well.
Yeah, the software vendor was selling this to lots of bookstores, and now that option is available thanks to his efforts and his insistence on that change being made. So a lot of good stuff has happened in Vermont, and our, you know, working with our congressional delegation, I think it's just terrific to see the effort moving forward. And, you know, the Vermont Library Association was the very first state library association to go on record opposing the Patriot Act, even before the National Association did. So
all the states are in agreement now, librarian association.
Yeah, I think there's only one at this point who hasn't formally voted a resolution against the Patriot Act, and they have it on their April board meeting agenda. So I suspect they'll probably do something, and then it'll be nationwide.
And so my advice, though, is to buy your books cash. Probably the bookstore owners will like the cash, and then there's no records.
That's true. There are no records, yeah.
And I don't know how old-fashioned library card kind of thing, how much is really kept with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's a good idea, actually. You might talk to your librarian. When you go into the library next time, ask about the issue. Tell your librarian that you're supportive of this effort to change the Patriot Act. Tell them that privacy matters to you, and ask them some questions about what records they're keeping and whether that can be changed. It might help for them to hear from their constituents.
Okay. Anybody else that was involved in that?
Locally here, you know, of course, lots of people. There are actually 15 towns in Vermont, in fact, that have now passed resolutions opposing the Patriot Act. Burlington, Vermont was the first, and there were a number of librarians in Burlington who came before city council and testified about the issue. And I know others did the same in other towns in Vermont. And in fact, our state legislature passed a resolution. We're one of only three states so far to have done that, going on record again opposing the Patriot Act. So lots of people in Vermont deserve a lot of credit.
Okay. Thank you, Vermont. And in May, what was it? May 1st? Is that written on here?
The deadline for the petition, I don't think it's on there, but that's when they hope to have them in.
So they would need to be mailed into the week before.
Probably so.
May 1st is when the librarians are going to Washington.
It's the first week of May. I'm not sure the dates, but they want to have them in hand by May 1st so that they can pull them together and show them off on Capitol Hill.
All right.
Yeah.
I think we pretty much covered it all, unless, did you have something else you wanted to throw out?
Yeah, I just want to close with one thought. You know, sometimes people ask, what is the big deal? Why do librarians care about these issues, right?
And the
answer is that if you have to go into your library and start worrying about what your reading list might look like to an FBI agent, you might start making some different decisions about the books that you look at and the books that you check out. And, you know, that's self-censorship. That's the chilling effect that we're worried about, the fear that someone's looking over your shoulder and making judgments about you based on what you read. That's just not good for democracy. It's not good for a people that need to be informed in order to govern themselves. And that's why we're concerned and want to change the law.
So you think it's the basic tenet of a librarian not to pass judgments on the type of information people seek?
Yeah, our job is just to help answer their questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We, the undersigned, urge our representatives in Congress to support legislation that amends Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act to restore the privacy of our bookstore and library records. You can get copies of this petition and more information at www.readerprivacy.org. That's readerprivacy.org. The preceding interview with Trina Maggie was recorded live by Charles Rossell in the studios of WGDR Plainfield, March 24th, 2004. It was edited by Brian and Charles Rossell, and you can get more information about WGDR at WGDR.org. Thank you.
Right before I close my eyes at night, I think, sense, feel, man, like I'm under some kind of microscope. Satellites over my head, transmitters in my dollars, hawking, watching, scoping, shocking, scrutinizing me, checking to see what I'm doing, where I be, who I see, how and where and with whom I make my money. What is this? Excuse me, miss. May I have your phone number and your social security? Who, me? When all I came to do was buy my double or triple A batteries? Please, I decline. Watch your mind, gotta open it up, don't know who's been in it, tracking where I go, finding out all my business, security, video cameras locked on me, in every dressing room, on every floor, in every store, damn, can I get that democracy and equality and privacy, you busy watching me, that you're blind, baby, you neglect to see the drugs coming into my community, weapons coming into my community, dirty cops in my community, and you keep saying that I'm free, and you keep saying that I'm free, and you keep saying that I'm free, busy watching me. Thank you.
days. If I'm gonna stay here, gonna build me a lead house. Keep them satellites out. Direct TV, am I watching it or is it watching me? Man, I don't really know. But I feel like I'm being scoped, y'all. Watch, y'all. Something ain't right. Something ain't right. And you keep saying that I'm free. 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 And you keep saying that.